I'm going to say anything about it. And if I am going to say something about it, what will I say? After all, people's opinion of 9/11 vary very widely in the U.S. One thing that I am fairly confident of is that when the Sunday, when 9/11 actually falls on a Sunday, like it does today, you probably need to say at least something. Now, the problem was, my plan had been to expand on last week's talk by further developing the concept of connectedness. Now, if anything, the way that 9/11 was handled further divided our country from the world. And within the country, it divided us from each other. So you can see my problem in trying to figure out how to talk about it and connectedness. There was, however, this brief moment just before 9/11 that speaks to the concept of connectedness. On 9/12, the morning after the attack, Le Monde, one of France's largest papers, published a headline on their front page that proclaimed, "We are all Americans." American author David Sedaris was living in Paris at the time, and he recalls the nation's response. He says, "Businessmen and widows called the embassy offering their beds to Americans stuck at the airport. And at noon on the official day of mourning, pedestrians stopped in their paths and cars actually pulled off of the road to observe 3 minutes of silence." There was a certain connectedness that the world felt on that day. So if the 4th of July is our Independence Day, I suggest that we come to think of 9/11 as our Interdependence Day. Now, don't confuse that with codependence, which describes a very unhealthy relationship. We're talking about interdependence, pointing out the inescapable reality that we are all connected, intimately and endlessly connected. British philosopher Alan Watts describes the intimate and endless connection this way. Imagine, if you will, a multidimensional spider's web. In the early morning, covered with dewdrops. And every dewdrop contains a reflection of all of the other dewdrops. And in each reflected dewdrop, the reflections of all the other dewdrops in their reflection. And so ad infinitum. That is the Buddhist conception of the universe in one image. As I mentioned last week, the Buddhist moral perspective is tied very heavily to the idea of connectedness, or as they call it, dependent origination. From it, they build the basis for empathy and compassion. Even increasingly, many areas of study recognize this connectedness. Psychology has a whole field called transpersonal psychology that recognizes the importance of our interconnectedness. Even scientific realities that may have at one point reinforced our feeling of separateness, well, they're now being questioned as quantum physics and electromagnetic fields and even dark matter and the like are suggesting that the building blocks of life aren't separated by empty space, but rather they're intimately connected in a holistic web of interconnection. Perhaps a good way to think about and understand this connectedness is to first think about what does interdependency, again, not codependency, interdependency, what does it look like in a personal relationship? Well, almost counterintuitively, healthy interdependency requires two people to be capable of autonomy or the ability to function independently. When couples love each other, it's normal to feel attached, to desire closeness, to be concerned for one another, and to depend on each other. Their lives are intertwined and they're affected by and need each other. However, they share power equally and take responsibility for their own feelings and actions and contributions to the relationship because they have self-esteem. They can manage their thoughts and feelings on their own, and they don't need someone to control so that they can feel okay. They can allow for each other's differences and honor and respect each other's separateness. Thus, they're not afraid to be honest and can listen to their partner's feelings and needs without feeling or becoming guilty and defensive. And since their self-esteem doesn't depend on their partner, they don't fear intimacy. And interdependence doesn't threaten that relationship. In fact, the relationship gives them each more freedom. There's mutual respect and support for one another's personal goals. But both are committed to the relationship. But what does this interdependency, this connectedness look like on a larger scale? Well, again, let's turn to the Buddhist. The law of dependent origination, of interdependency, is one of the most important teachings of Buddha. And in the Dependent Origination Sutra, Buddha states, if there is this, that ensues. Because this came into being, that came into being. It is thus, due to ignorance, volition arises. In other words, in order for a particular event or a particular experience to take place, there must be a cause. But the Buddha taught that ignorance of dependent origination, ignorance of our interdependency, keeps people confused and bound up in views and actions that result in suffering for themselves and for others. Now, in this way of understanding the world, we may be the products of causality, but we are the producers of the very causes which determine whether or not we perpetuate suffering or attain liberation. The Buddhist vision of dependent origination is a vision in which sentient beings are not determined by forces beyond their control, but rather are fully integrated in the co-arising, co-creating, co-causality of all things, and such they're able to take responsibility for themselves and create better conditions for themselves and others by making better causes informed by an awareness of the way things arise in mutual dependence. Now, recognizing our basic interconnectedness, it means more than just acknowledging that we do live lives only in relationship to those contributing to our ability to do so. It means being able to imagine ourselves in the position of others and then empathizing with the obstacles they face. It means stopping at an intersection not just because the light has turned red, but because it's someone else's turn to proceed. Someone else who has their own important business to transact and needs to pass through the same intersection. Even more than that, dependent origination means no one can truly be happy if even one other person in their environment remains miserable. Now, this isn't just because happiness and suffering spread from person to person like a virus. It's also because all men and women are sisters and brothers created from the same star stuff, and a full recognition of the significance of dependent origination births the one thing that makes us common mortals approach the divine. Concern for others. So, the next time you cut someone off in traffic, find yourself exasperated and speaking to someone rudely on the phone, walk past a homeless person without bothering to see if they're all right, take secret pleasure in someone else's misfortune simply because it didn't fall on you, or just inconvenience someone by crossing against the red light directly in front of them. Remember that your perception of yourself as a wholly independent entity, as a fully self-sustaining organism, and as someone to whom bad things won't happen is nothing more than a delusion. When even one of us falls, all of us are threatened. That is simply the nature of reality. It's the same nature of reality that led Dr. Martin Luther King to say, injustice anywhere is a threat to justice everywhere. Indeed, in a fully interconnected world, injustice anywhere gives rise to injustice elsewhere. In a fully interconnected world, hate towards anyone gives rise to even more hate. In a fully interconnected world, greed anywhere can give rise to even more greed elsewhere. Yet, on an equal basis, in a fully interconnected world, compassion towards just one person can give rise to compassion towards many. In a fully interconnected world, an empathetic response in a given situation can give rise to even more empathy elsewhere. It seems fair, I think, to assume that most people would much rather live in a world that is full of compassion rather than one that's full of pain and full of difficulties. If we can learn to truly recognize our interdependence on one another and to put it into practice, we can begin to create a world that looks a lot like a healthy interdependent relationship like I talked about earlier, a world where most people can function independently but yet feel attached to one another and are connected to one another, a world where we depend on each other, a world where lives are intertwined and they're affected by and need each other, a world where we don't have to have control of other people to feel okay, a place where we can allow for each other's differences and honor each other's separateness, a world where there's mutual respect and support for one another's personal goals, while remaining focused on creating a better world for everyone together. That's the value of shedding our ignorance about our interconnectedness. That's the reason that we must be constantly aware of it in every interaction that we make. We, it would seem, are beautifully and frighteningly interwoven together on this small blue ball that hurls through space. If we ever hope to make it everything it can be, we must first learn to understand everything that it really is. This is your opportunity to respond to the talk or the topic for today. There are others who have thoughts that they'd like to share. Right.
But what do you see as the leadership and what groups will be responsible for bringing this together to make some changes? Because it seems to me that we may be getting further apart. Well, I don't know that we are, but we may be. And if we are, who's going to bring us back together? Is the church that?
Well, I think that we see ourselves as further apart and we act like we're further apart. Part of what I'm trying to point towards is the reality that even science is pointing to, that we're more connected than we realized we were. And so the concept of interconnectedness, particularly when you look at it from dependent origination, from a Buddhist perspective, is a very individualistic pursuit that ultimately brings us all together when we're all practicing it that way. On a larger scale, who's going to help us see that we're not apart? I think it just comes down to education. You can take course in spiritual communities like a church, but I think that it needs to be done on a larger scale as well. Where that happens is, I don't know, that's difficult. But it's more the concept more as an individual pursuit that helps on a larger scale. I'm not sure if that answers your question. I don't know that there is a large body whose responsibility it is to do that for us. I think we each have to do that individually. Over here.
Thank you. I was listening this morning to Krista Tippett's show on Being,
Yes. And
she had a surprising guest who was a co-founder of Wikipedia.
Hello.
And I must say I've not been someone who's had particular admiration for Wikipedia, but I was really impressed by the model and the principles and ideals that undergird this. And, I mean, talk about an interdependent concept that involves millions and millions and millions of people. And because it is an open situation, you know, he described, you know, yes, somebody can go in and remove an entire entry and replace it with a curse word, but that there are so many people monitoring this, including the people who created the original entry and its edits, that the response that's encouraged is, I saw that you deleted this entry and replaced it with a single word. I have replaced the original article, but because I assume you don't know quite how this works. So here's a link to a sandbox where you can play around with the software and so you can figure out how to be helpful in doing this. And a number of people who are now regular contributors say they started out as, quote, jackals who were trying to be disruptive, and that the principle of always respond with compassion, even when someone says something that you disagree with. I mean, there were all sorts of important things in this thing. And in this political season where it's so easy for progressive folks, which is how most of us would describe ourselves, to say the problem is with those other people who are only after their own self-interest, I had an interaction with someone on the street registering voters yesterday and regret that I didn't respond in a way that I wish I had, which is I could tell he was trying to trip me up because he disagreed. He thought there should be voter IDs. And I didn't stick with him long enough to try to, I mean, I tried unsuccessfully to get him to say what his real concern was. Because I think if we only listen to people who think like we do, we're no better than people that we're disagreeing with. Hmm. And anyway, I recommend that show from this morning.
Thank you for sharing that. Are there others with thoughts or responses?
Hi, I'm Zora. I didn't hear the entire sermon, but it seemed related to thoughts that have been in my mind lately. Some of you have studied Carl Jung, but I am seeing in the collective right now the shadow coming up, or sometimes known as the saboteur, which upsets everything, which is all our denied anguishes, angers, hatreds, what has been buried in the collective, but yet persists as an undercurrent. We all have it within ourselves, within our individual psyches, and the collective certainly has it. And having compassion for that and listening to it, at the same time, it's a great healing to have compassion and listen to that angry little wounded child shadow thing within us, ourselves, and within the collective. It's difficult to do, but listening and dealing with what the real issue is, as Susan said. And we have a person running for president who represents that shadow extremely well and is forcing us to listen to him. That doesn't mean that we put the shadow in power, which some people are really, because they've denied it for so long and they recognize this mirror. But it is important to have compassion and to deal with what buried issues are there. Thank you.
Thank you, Elsie.
Only thing I was wanting to say is, like Sue was describing, not responding the way she wished she had, and if there might be a class again or something where we can practice, I think, the role-playing kind of thing of practicing responding, because I find myself when I'm confronted with people that I'm just shocked by the hate or whatever is there, and I'm completely speechless. Whereas if I had an opportunity to practice and be and coach one another, it's just a thought for something that we might do.
There are others who want to respond to.
Following up on what Sue has said and what Zora said, I went to New York after 9/11 for a couple of weeks with the Red Cross, and came back. And then, as we moved towards war, I joined the people who were standing downtown protesting the war, and I carried a sign that said "God bless everybody." And one day, a gentleman got out of his car and stomped up the street with things jangling from his belt and came up and demanded to know what right I thought I had to be standing there. I hadn't done anything. And after listening to him for a few moments, I said, "Sir, excuse me. I went to New York after 9/11 with the Red Cross, and I was there for a couple of weeks. So I think I do have a right to stand here and say what I'm saying. And I'm not protesting. Look at my sign." He dissolved into tears and said his brother was a fireman in New York who had died in 9/11. And we had a very nice, heartfelt conversation after that. So, yeah, it is possible to do those kinds of things.
Absolutely. Thank you for sharing, Vance.
I'm Martha, and I find when discussing issues, oftentimes I see that people may hear the words I say, but they really don't understand my position, and sometimes they completely mistake my position, and sometimes I think that's more due to where they're coming from than my inability to communicate. And so I think that probably happens not only to me but to many, and that is a more common thing than we think. And so when I'm having conversations with other people, I try to dig deep enough to truly understand where they're coming from rather than where I think they're coming from. Thank you.
Are there others with responses to the talk or our theme of interconnectedness? Down front.
I'm Todd, and my first time here. It's a fascinating discussion, and glad I found myself sitting where I am this morning. And I don't know, in this day and age of interconnectedness, I had to replace my Apple phone camera yesterday, so for 2 hours I had to leave it at the Apple store and run around not knowing what time it was or what's happening in the world and just what was happening, you know, 3, 5, 6 feet away from me, just like it used to be. And I urge everybody to do the same thing. I may just leave mine behind for a couple of days next time. But it's when you start talking about politics and geo-global situations and all this, I think, I don't know, we're a mess on a global scale. But I think each of us individually, and I can't speak for anybody but myself, would rather have a society and a culture and a community and a church that works together to move and advance, to get further and better than we are. And it's just when you manifest it in terms of what we have going along with our election right now, and you're pitting two different things together, It's not human. I mean, it's a mechanism, and We can't get too caught up in that. I think what one field looks at the other and thinks that they're full of hate, I think that other field is probably, to the last woman's point, it's misunderstood. I think this other field is probably frustrated that progress and things aren't happening. And it looks to the other side like they're hateful, but it's like, no, it's, you know, we're not performing well. We have to do better. Anyway, you start unconnecting from the bigger world. You put your phone down and just look around like a room like this. This is where progress happens, one-on-one.
Thank you. Thanks for sharing. Others, thoughts? Right back here.
Hi, I'm Jim. It's interesting to talk about communications, and I've spent a lot of my life in technical part of communications. But I see so much of what I call, what we call communications. Like, for example, I see the iPhones and smartphones and where we're at. I think we're missing something in that communication, the face-to-face dialogue with each other. And there's a depth there that's missing, in my opinion. And I think one of the things we need in our life, or I need in mine for sure, is communication with each other. And I think that's very important, and it's sad to me to see that that seems to be declining. But I think we need more of it. If it be coffee, if it be whatever, just time spent together.
Great. Thanks for sharing. Others, responses to this talk or thoughts on interconnectedness?
Oh, right behind you.
Very briefly, just want to add one more thing relating to what Jim said. If you want face-to-face interaction and much joy and wonder and magic, go out and be with the folk today at the National Folk Festival. And especially listen to Le Vent du Nord. They are a Quebec group that channels passion and wonder and joy in such a clear, magical way that all this stuff, this garbage that is in the shadow, gets channeled into energy and ecstasy. So just wanted to say.